the various mediums. In the past, we've had movies that have enhanced my spiritual life, books, we've done music. Now this summer, we're doing television and debating rock songs, perhaps for future years. So if anybody wants to start thinking of those, or we'll start cycling through with movies or something again. But this is always just a fun session where we kind of get to touch base, especially in these cases with popular culture, and learn and see things in new ways, and perhaps come to appreciation that some of these mediums aren't just these vast moral wastelands after all. Remind everybody to have a badge or a ticket, please. If there wasn't somebody at your door taking your ticket, you could still feel free to... Oh, she's there. So good, so we have her in this session. That's terrific. Please turn off any noisemakers, cell phones, etc., and we'll be ready to go. Are you guys close? No?
Someone needs to keep going.
Okay, so just keep the volume down. We are just going to have some fun right now. We have really four of the coolest people on this panel, as far as just personalities and as people I really, really enjoy interacting with. We'll go ahead and go in the order printed in the program, so let me just quickly introduce you to each person. Robert Kirby probably needs no introduction to this audience. He's probably one of the most beloved journalists, writing a regular column in the Salt Lake Tribune, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. His Saturday column is typically his one that talks about Mormon culture. He's the author of many books, and behind the humor is a very wise soul who can tell us the truth in ways that are just neat and to the point, and any of his kidding is just him playing the role. He really is insightful. Something you may not know is his most recent book has just been published by the University of Utah. It's a little bit different than Family Home Screaming. This time he's dealing with Utah's murdered police officers. So he gives a bit of history and background on all the police officers who've fallen in the line of duty. He himself is a former police officer. In fact, his first books, I understand, were Officer Blitz Krieg was his pen name. And I know Happy Valley Patrol. Did you write any others under that
name? No, just that one.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he's just terrific. I know we're going to have some fun here. I won't tell you who or what TV show he's going to speak about. Following Robert, we'll have Jana Reese, who, again, many of you know from just lots of different ways. She has a doctorate in American religion from Columbia. She's got one of the cooler jobs in the universe, and that's the religion books editor for Publishers Weekly, so she gets to see all these books. We understand she has a up-close and personal relationship with many UPS drivers who visit her home 5, 6, 7 times a day with loads of the latest books to come that she then sorts and sends out for reviews and things. She's just so much fun. She's on the panel today, and I guess we can give away what she'll probably speak about. She's the author of a book that just came out this spring called What Would Buffy Do? The Vampire Slayer, a Spiritual Guide. And so we're going to learn how the morals of the Buffyverse. But her book's just terrific. I really loved it. I just love the way it's written and the wonderful tone. Peggy Sherlock is just a cool person. We are going to really enjoy meeting her. She's got one of those personalities that you just want to hang out with. She is, as you can see from the program, she has a master's degree in French literature. She's taught at various capacities at 4 different colleges and universities. She loves the arts. She's going to mention in her remarks an aunt in France who was an art collector and imbued her with those things. She also wanted you to all know that her 86-year-old mother is here today, who is her most, her greatest fan and supporter. And she also receives every time from a good friend, Robert Kirby's columns, regularly through email. So she's in touch with you, Brother Kirby. So that's just terrific to have you with us today. And then one of the really, another enjoyable character down there at the end is Troy Williams. Troy holds a bachelor's degree in film studies and anthropology, two different degrees from the University of Utah. He's the co-founder of Open Door Documentaries and is currently working on a feature-length film on homeless gay and lesbian teenagers in Salt Lake City. He's the producer of KRCL's Radioactive. Yesterday's guest was Margaret Starbird. Today is Leah Lipke and who?
Toby
Pingree. So he's it's been moved for him to sort of be organic with Sunstone this week. He's always been kind to book our people on the show and help publicize and hopefully get nice, interesting programs out of it. But Radioactive is Utah's only local liberal public affairs and social justice talk show. And again, I won't give away the shows that he's going to talk about. So I'll just turn time over to Billy Kirby, and we'll just go from there.
I remember how much impact television had on my life. Most poignantly, when I came home from my LDS mission back in 1975, and prior to going on my mission, there wasn't really a lot of need to censor television. My parents were not really liberal, but they had a fairly open mind about things like that, and so we could pretty much watch whatever we wanted to watch. And I kind of grew up believing that television played an important social role in my family. There was nothing too scary on it, other than maybe The Outer Limits. That was no worse than Priesthood Meeting. We could kind of watch whatever we wanted to watch. Coming home from my mission, I remember I was still in that stage, that transitional stage. It lasts pretty much anywhere from a couple hours after you get off the plane to about a week, where you're still dressed like a missionary, you know, you're really not out of the mold yet. And I was sitting in the front room, and the television was on, and suddenly right there was an advertisement for feminine hygiene products. And I remember thinking, we've really broken through here in television. Now television was something that had to be worried about. And for a missionary to come home and see that, suddenly you're looking at commercials about tampons, it was really shocking to me. That said, there are a number of things on television that have enhanced my spiritual well-being, and I'm going to talk about one show in particular that I've really enjoyed, and I get more spiritual connection out of it than I do just about anything else. I view life largely as an absurdist. Anytime somebody tells me that I'm supposed to be deeply serious about something, that's when I start getting these warning signals going off in my head. Because usually they're trying to steer you somewhere. And that's why I enjoy this particular show so much, The Simpsons. It is, I believe personally, and I'm saying I believe, I don't say that I know, I believe that Homer Simpson is actually John the Beloved, still here on the earth. There is a guy who makes every mistake he possibly can. He is a lout in every sense of the word. He will commit any sort of moral crime short of being unfaithful to his family. And so for Simpsons, the family's really well forever. And I like that because it portrays somebody who's badly and deeply flawed, like the rest of us, who never loses sight of what is truly important in life, and that is the people that you love. And so I like that. But I also like the ancillary characters. I love Bill and Lovejoy. You know, that is high council Sunday every day of the week. Everybody, every Mormon has lived next door to a Flanders family. The family that we lived next door lived, believe it or not, on carrot juice for about a month until they turned orange. And that was their version of the word of wisdom. There are so many other characters too. I mean, every high priest group has a comic bookstore guy in it. You know, somebody who's incredibly knowledgeable about absolutely nothing that serves any purpose. What else? Any other Simpson characters you can think of that represent good Mormons? Pooh Bart? Oh yeah, Bart. You can just see Bart and Milhouse singing, "I Hope They Call Me on a Mission." Knowing full well that they're not going to go. No way will the church let them go. Yeah, that's right. The church spreading its, you know, influence outside the borders of the United States. I know the church is true. Lisa, yes. Lisa, yeah, the smart one, the radical up-and-coming feminist who really is going to change the church. Yeah, we can't forget Lisa and Maggie, the silent one.
Marge goes to homemaker.
Marge is the perfect homemaker, making do with the pittance that Homer drags home every day. You can't get a better example of Relief Society in action than Marge Simpson.
Carl
and
Lenny is home teacher.
Carl and Lenny is home teacher. Yeah, I didn't even thought of that. That's actually, really, that's very good. Yeah, he's the high priest group leader. Or possibly one of the general parties, I don't know. I don't know if all of you are really Sunstone people, so I'm not going to go down that road.
Patty and Selma.
Patty and Selma, yeah, the singles word. Yeah. Could marry anybody, including a polygamist, just to have a husband. This is good. I'm getting a column out of this. This is good material. Well, I know it's on tape, but I got to write some ideas right now when I'm thinking about it.
Sideshow Bob.
Well, you got to have your fundamentalists, I suppose. Who else? There's Krusty the Clown. I don't know, where does he fit in? Oh, yeah, he could be a Salt Lake Tribune's columnist. Kirby the Clown.
What about
Kang
and his...
Remember the show where Homer opened the door and there's Kang and the other alien standing there and he goes, "Oh no, the Mormons," and he slammed the door. That was great. I like that part. But what I really like about that show, getting back to the main point, is the loyalty that exists in a world that's fraught with stupidity, that exists in the Simpsons. I mean, I watch that show just to see if I can catch Homer Simpson betraying the one thing that we're told to do, which is to be loyal to those we love in life. And if we can do that, we can sort of get through that. Everything else is kind of ancillary to that. And what I really like about Simpsons is that I can bring it up in high priest group and nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. They start thumbing through their scriptures. Oh no, this Homer guy, where is he? Well, that's my bit. Any questions? Well, I really appreciate the feedback. Give me a lot of really great ideas. As for William Smithers, I guess he's a new element in the church too. Thanks very much.
Well, I had originally planned to spend 6 minutes of my time showing this clip. And man, am I ever glad I did, because who can follow Robert Kirby? That's just totally unfair. So I'm glad that I made that decision. The clip that we're going to see, I'll talk about Buffy for a minute and why this is my favorite show. But but I want to set up this clip and just tell you a little bit about who these characters are. This is from the end of the sixth season of Buffy, which is the darkest season. We've, you know, been laughing and having humor, but no more of that. We're done. This is serious stuff. This is where Willow, the young woman that you see here, who has been one of Buffy's closest friends for the previous 5.5 years, goes to the dark side, and she's a practicing witch. I didn't get struck down for saying that yet. And she becomes more and more powerful as she is feeding into this power of the dark side, and she wants to destroy the world. And it's a very interesting statement about the apparent meaninglessness of life and then the affirmation of meaning, as we're going to hear toward the end of the clip, Sarah McLachlan singing the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi and showing clips of compassion. So before we watch that though, first of all, free book here for anyone besides Holly and Troy, who I know could answer a trivia question. And Holly, you already have a copy of the book, so sorry. Trivia question for Buffy. What is the name of the woman that Riley goes on to marry in the sixth season? First hand up gets the book. I guess we've got a frustrated fan back here. Yes?
Is it Heidi?
It is not Heidi. Yes? It's Sam. Woo! You have it already. Good for you. Wow. Thanks for buying the book. Appreciate that. This week I'm part of a roundtable discussion of spirituality on television on beliefnet.com. And it's not posted yet to the public. I think it'll be up next week. But it's been very interesting to read what these other people have had to say about spirituality and TV, including Mark Pinsky, who wrote, some of you may know, The Gospel According to the Simpsons, which is a great book. And if you're a fan of The Simpsons, you should definitely buy that book. He has found spirituality not only in The Simpsons, but also South Park, which I haven't watched, but Dan assures me, has dealt in very interesting ways with Mormon themes. I guess some of you have seen this. That's on my list. And lately, we've also seen other shows, such as Joan of Arcadia, which I have not started watching yet, address spiritual themes in a more direct way, a more intentional way. And I think that studying religion in America and where it's going, where it's been, that's a trend that we're going to see more of as the seasons go on. I recently found out that NBC is actually planning a mid-season replacement show called Revelation, and I'm glad that they decided to put that in the singular and not the plural, because I'm one of those really pedantic people that gets very angry in church when people say Revelations and not Revelation for the last book of the Bible. At any rate, this show is going to star Bo Pullman and seems to be a direct response to the Left Behind series that has been so popular in American culture. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes, whether evangelical Christianity can fly on network television, who knows. But it's very interesting that we live in a time when that's being tried. Buffy is a very different kind of show. Buffy draws eclectically from many different religious traditions without declaring any one tradition to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. There's truth in many different places for Buffy and for her friends. So let's watch this clip of Willow, and her friend that she's attacking is also Buffy's friend Xander. He's the one that gave me the title for my book, What Would Buffy Do? I didn't make that up. It's a line from the show. In the fourth season, he says to Buffy, when it's dark and I'm all alone, and I often think to myself, what would Buffy do? And then he follows that up saying, okay, so when it's dark and I'm all alone, I often think, what is Buffy doing? But he tells her in a kind of a downtime in her life that she's his hero, and she's mine too.
Yeah. I get that. It's just one of those things I got to go. I've been my best in my whole life. Well, I'm going to end. Well, so I'm going to
leave. Is this the master plan? You're going to stop me by telling me you love me?
Well, I'm just going to walk you off the cliff and end to end. It's in there touching me.
Still making me.
I'm not joking. I know you're in pain. I can't imagine the pain you're in. And I know you're about to do something apocalyptically evil and stupid. And hey, so I am. You will.
Don't call me that.
The first day of kindergarten, you cried because you broke the yellow crayon. And you're too afraid to tell anyone. You've gone pretty far, and the world had a terrific notion. But the thing is, yeah, I love you. I love crayon breaking willow, and I love scary veiny willow. So if I'm going out, it's here. If you want to kill the world, then start with me. I've earned that.
You think I won't?
It doesn't matter. I'll still love you.
Shut up.
I love you.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't want to break into anybody else's time, so...
Buffy and her sister reconcile after a season of angst and separation and estrangement. Okay, now start. Thanks.
Stop it. Thank you. What's particularly powerful about that last scene, if you are a fan of the show, the writers pay a tremendous amount of attention to continuity of story. And in the first episode of this season, Buffy is resurrected from the dead in order to come back and serve her purpose as the Slayer. And this is basically against her will. She's pulled out of heaven to come back and save the world. And for her, being on Earth is a hell experience. She spends the whole sixth season in a very depressed, almost suicidal state. And that last sequence where she is clawing her way out of the grave is visually identical to the sequence at the beginning of the season where she is clawing her way out of the grave. Only this time, she is doing it with her sister, and she was affirmed in the scene that we actually flipped through, her reason for being on Earth. Buffy, you know, I used to believe it, and maybe there are some skeptics here who still do. It looks like a really silly show. It has a blonde, pert, cheerleader kind of young woman who is charged with saving the world. But again and again, this show managed to surprise me. It still does. And that's why it's my favorite show. There's one other thing I wanted to say to the person who won the book. I need to warn you, I used that to kill a spider just about an hour ago. It was the only thing that I had handy, and I whacked it. So if there's spider guts on it, I looked at it, and then I thought, well, this is appropriate. You know? A spider slayer. So thank you all very much.
Wow, this is great. Whew. I'm Peggy Sherlock, and I've never published a thing in my life, not even a master's thesis. So it's an honor to be here with all, whoo, people that have published so much, wow. But I haven't got a bum back, so I thought I'd sit down, but now I need to be standing up. All right, here we go. Help and puff, and off we go. In 1957, at the ripe old age of 13, I returned from a year-and-a-half-long stay with my aunt and uncle in Paris, France. Already, I had assumed the deportment of a prima donna, homed out of a private school on many jaunts across the continent. My five brothers were not impressed. One day we clashed swords over the ingredients required for a bowl of Campbell's tomato soup. The brothers insisted on their usual one can of soup added to one can of milk. I, nonplussed creature that I was, stepped to the floor and in an indecorous manner offered the following. In the Paris, France, we learn to enhance the flavor, not detract from it. Well, since my brothers have often reminded me since then what a snob I was, they were right. I chose this comparison, though, between enhancing and detracting, not just for soup, but for practically every choice we make in life. So much so that I have requested my tombstone to read, quote, enhance the flavor. But right now, it is time to get out of the kitchens and into the dens of TV rooms and of America. I remember an old Calvin Grundahl or Pat Bagley cartoon of three people standing in front of the theater with placards. The first placard says, "This movie is too sexy." The second placard reads, "This movie is too violent." The third one reads, "This movie is too boring." It is not that I'm saying we need all the sex and violence we can get. Maybe we do. But if we throw out the drama, the tragedy, the erotic passion, the absurdity, not to mention the really black humor that I love that they brought up so well, isn't it a bit like throwing out the baby with the bathwater? These are the reasons that the one show I want to mention on this panel is ER, or as I like to call it, I Love Lucy. No, I Love Luca. Okay, I think everybody was good with that. The blurb for this session talks about shows enhancing one's spiritual life. The blurb goes on to ask, are there intelligent, well-written shows with a fully functioning compass? That last moral compass, excuse me, yeah, fully functioning moral compass. That last sentence sounds a little boring to me. I like the next sentence much better. Are there any characters, good, bad, or much more complex, that inspire hope and impart informative wisdom? I like ER because of all the gray matters it covers. Perry Mason of Ben Locke, of Matlock, always won every case. James Anderson and Ward Cleaver never lied or cut corners. Okay, and they always, okay, here we go. Donna Reed was never abused and nobody in Midbury ever slept in the alleys. Even on the other side, you always knew that JR would do something crooked. But ER to me is the real world where difficult moral choices have to be made and people aren't easy saints or plastic devils. Where children have alcoholic parents they still love. Where guns kill good people and people die of cancer or heart disease. Where people don't stop smoking or doing drugs. Where free clinics have to beg for money and they do not have someone come to their door at the end of the show and give them $1 million out of nowhere. Here are three good examples of these, I hope, of these moral gray area choices from this show. One, they spend so much money on one patient in the ER that after he has spent time in Africa, Luca, be still my heart, realizes in Africa you could save hundreds or even thousands of lives with the same money. He doesn't preach it, he hints at it, so that you can scarcely miss the point. Point two, when Mark Green was dying, there was a time when he said, enough is enough, so to speak. He didn't want to put himself through more tests, and more chemotherapy. He knew the prognosis and just wanted to die in peace in Hawaii, which mine is a pretty peaceful death, if you ask me. If you're in Hawaii, that's pretty nice. His wife, Alex, begged him to get more help, but though he loved her, he just couldn't see it. Her love limited her vision. His impending death had liberated his. Point three. When Carol found out she was pregnant with Doug's and her twins, she had a choice to make. Marry him right then, abort, give up the twins, or keep them. The church did, the church, Freudian slip. The show did not give you the usual happy ending. She kept the twins as a single mom eventually, but only eventually, going on to Doug. I like these gray areas. They draw me into the storyline in such a way that I'm not just an observer. I am also a participant. I assimilate the good, the bad, and the choices that lie in the area between. If life is never absolutely black and white, why should we expect definite answers from a powerful dramatic medium? Where is the growth in that? One of my pet peeves is the use of the phrase, quote, it's a show the whole family can watch, or you should watch TV together as a family, as if the only TV we should watch is Barney and Friends. ER is not like this. ER asks the tough questions. Why have I had such good fortune while others have had only tragedy? Why do some suffer seemingly without God's protection? If God intended for us to live in certain ways, why don't we all start out on an equal footing? ER raises the questions we live with as individuals, families, and church members or outsiders. The questions cannot be avoided, and the answers are not easy. I think ER enhances life, and I am grateful for it. The end.
I'm really kind of embarrassed today. I thought the panel was called TV That Has Enhanced My Sexual Life, and so I'm just going to read what I've got, and I hope you're all okay with that. I think anybody who is self-reflexive and considers the ontology of personal development has to consider the major elements that shape their lives. Why am I the way that I am, and how did I get so jacked up? Was it my parents, my religion, was it the music I listened to, all of the above? Probably. The sanctimonious moralists that comprise the compassionate conservative right have been denouncing media for years, and TV in particular. Unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons. I think TV is toxic for you, but not because of the sex or violence. No, those are the good things. I think TV is toxic mainly because of advertising, cleverly composed to sell you on the idea that you are in perpetual lack, that you are not sexy and cool without product X for Generation Y. So I want to tell you how television was good for me, but for all of the wrong reasons. How TV helped arouse my sexual instincts, taught me about the nature of propaganda, and eventually reinforced and encouraged my triumphant apostasy from the corporate LDS church. First off, I want to tell you something very cool about myself, and that's, I'm gay. Yep, I'm a big, Nelly, homo, girly man fag, right? And it's like my favorite thing about myself. And people always want to know, well, why do you think you're gay? You know, were you born that way? Were you abused? Was your dad distant? What do you think? And I think that the real reason why I'm gay is because I was obsessed with watching Wonder Woman as a child. You remember the show, Linda Carter, Colgate Smile. This woman could spin around in a circle and like totally explode. And then there she is, you know, with her boots and her lasso and that fabulous tiara. And she just pulled it off. And really, you know, American flag fashion wear wouldn't come into vogue until post 9/11, you know, but she was doing it in the 1970s. And of course, Wonder Woman was gay, right? My evidence? Well, she comes from Paradise Island, where there are all Amazons and no men. Come on! And then there's Steve Trevor. Here she works with a guy, saving his ass every week, and nothing ever happens between them. Why is that? I mean, Lyle Wagner was a hottie back in the day, right? Diana was pretty good looking, but they never hooked it up. Why? Because she was a lesbian, alright? Wonder Woman also taught me about feminism and patriarchy, though I didn't know what it was called at the time. In the first season, the writers employed this rather dubious convention where a villain, which was usually a man, could strip her of her power belt and she would lose all of her superhuman strength. Now, I'm not a feminist theorist, okay, but I think that many papers could be written just deconstructing that kind of idea, right? The idea that power is somehow external to a woman, right, and that it can be taken from her. Well, that was a lesson that I would learn also reinforced growing up in the Mormon church. With Wonder Woman also came Batman and Robin. And, well, yeah, you have the older sugar daddy and his young, eager beaver ward. And before you can say, holy steamboat, Batman, I was hooked. Kind of makes you wonder what else was going on in that utility belt, what they had, but I go there. There is a superhero theme in my upbringing, and I think that comes again from being gay. Most heroes have to hide their true identities behind glasses. They have to pretend they're not fabulous and amazing. Until they slide down the pole or spin circles and explode, then they get to be who they really are. And feeling different, feeling like a misfit, feeling like you have to pretend, the mythology of the superhero becomes an appealing fantasy. Now, I remember being a kid, maybe 8 or 9, lying in bed, and I had a picture of Arnold Freiberg's painting of Ammon. And you know the one. He's standing there with his shirt off, his muscles ripped and flexed. He's protecting the sheep from the robbers. And I sat there thinking quite innocently, why can't boys marry other boys? And it was such a no-brainer for me at the time. And at the same time, there's also that picture of Nephi and his family coming to the Promised Land. There's that young kid, Jacob, right? And he's got the little wristband, and he's just ripped. And my little 8-year-old self was looking at him going, whoa. So, whereas I do credit Wonder Woman and Batman to my emerging sexuality, I think that one of the biggest impacts on my life had to be the Book of Mormon. I'm going to skip the $6 million man part. It's about bionic sex. And never mind. In the late 70s, as a very young boy, I started learning about the gospel and the church. And one of the reasons that I knew for certain that it was true was because Battlestar Galactica was based on it. My family would watch the show, and then we'd all gather around and talk about the gospel truths that were revealed each and every week. The Galactica crew once met these aliens who told them, as you are, we once were, and as we are, you can yada yada yada. And I was like, wow, it's true, see? I think it's a really good thing that Battlestar Galactica only lasted one season in the 70s, because whereas the church could probably survive an assault from Sonja Johnson and the ERA, they probably couldn't survive a really bad, cheesy space opera, right? This is also the time when my entire family became hooked on General Hospital. We watched with joy and shed tears when Luke and Laura escaped from the villainous Cassadine family who was trying to freeze the world from their secret island lair. The subsequent wedding of Luke and Laura was perhaps the most emotional experience I ever had watching daytime television. General Hospital was so popular at the time, and it was also sort of crossing gender boundaries, because for the first time it was okay for a boy to watch a TV show that's primarily marketed toward women. I loved it. one of the things I think that was unfortunate for us Gen Xers and our previous generation is that we didn't have a lot of gay role models on TV. I never saw myself represented, so I just kind of found the best I could. For example, I kind of like the Smurf cartoons because you have a village of all boys with one fabulous drag queen, Smurfette. I mean, what better fantasy can you imagine? The 80s was a time when my nascent gayness was really becoming oppressed. I was being socialized properly through the gospel and our heterodominant, God-fearing president. I had heard rumors that Reagan was like taking the missionary discussions and then he believed in it, but he just couldn't join because he had work to do. And when I think back to last June and the news coverage of his death, with every media outlet having their multiple Reagasms, it's reassuring to know at long last that his temple work can be done now. The 80s was also the time when I experienced my first really out gay character on TV, and I'm not talking about Charles Nelson Reilly from The Match Game. Stephen Carrington was the token fag on Dynasty. You know, he was the son of Blake, he tried to marry Claudia, didn't work out. And it was strange watching him, and I didn't know really, but I thought about it. I was being taught by that time how bad and horrible being gay was. And the Carrington family treated their son like shit, so geez, being gay just sucks. I didn't want to be that. In the 80s, my sexual libido was all conflicted, a big conflicted mess. I had MTV now with Madonna singing Like a Virgin and Billy Idol singing Flesh for Fantasy. And Boy George, that strange sexual conundrum, that karma chameleon. That's what gay is? That's not me. I must not be gay. Because I'm not like Boy George. I didn't watch much TV in high school because I was doing other things. Like theater. But I did see the Mormon Church kick off their new marketing campaign to appeal to Middle America. You know the videos, My Heavenly Father's Plan, Together Forever, etc. These were magnificent pieces of emotionally manipulative pablum. I think probably the PR firm being the Reagan election ads had a hand in these. And I ate them up. And oh my God, I'm crying, so I must be feeling the spirit. And since I'm crying, it must be true. And I think logically that's like, if A then B, therefore if A, C, never mind. I didn't do well in my logic class in school. And so at this time I decided to go on a mission with my burning testimony that the Book of Mormon had really hot men in it. And that these videos could make the world cry and know the truth of all things. That was pretty much my testimony at the time. And off I went to England where it was all going to start falling apart. First off, the British are on to American propaganda. And everybody I ever showed one of these cheesy, manipulative Mormon videos to you thought they were crap. One investigator told me that she thought her Heavenly Father's plan was saccharine sweet. All the people were a little too good-looking, a little too sincere, a little too white, blah, blah, blah. Blasphemy. But then I realized she was right. It was my first real lesson in media literacy. It was when I first started to see that lights and cameras could create illusions, and that the illusions of Mormonism, the doctrine, the history, the patriarchy, the misogyny, the homophobia, all started to become clear. I was inactive a year after my mission, but I still wanted to believe in something. But college and just plain common sense told me that Mormonism was incongruent with who I was as a person. It didn't make sense with the world that I was experiencing. In the 90s, I became hooked on The X-Files, a postmodern metaphor for humankind's search for God. Here was Agent Fox Mulder trying to get to the truth that was out there. The government of The X-Files was no longer the beneficent entity that I saw in Reagan propaganda, but a dark, shadowy cabal of privileged men who wanted to withhold the truth about extraterrestrials from the population. It was so much like the corporate church, trying to withhold the truth from its members and excommunicating, anybody who opposed them. And yet the poster on Mulder's wall said it all, I want to believe. This is how I was. I wanted to believe in God, in Mormonism, in those hot men from the Book of Mormon. But as much as I wanted this, there was always that Agent Scully, that skeptic, challenging my every detail. It was an amazing juxtaposition, the believer versus the skeptic. And every week the show played out the battle going on in the Mulder Scully dyad of my mind. The show became a metaphor for my own wrestling with faith in God and truth. And I had my name removed from the church records in 1999. What a great liberating experience that was for me. One of the best decisions of my life. Free from the corporate church, I became free of Mormonism and hence free to be gay. No more self-torture, no more self-denial, no more believing the lies and bullshit that the church teaches about women and authority and homosexuality. I am free to be who I am, and that is the greatest gift. Later in my life, I would turn more towards the political. In the post-9/11 world, television changed my life again. And I saw that with a mass consolidation of media power into the hands of an elite minority, the network and cable news uncritically supported an unelected president's mad rush to war. Every night on news channels like Rupert Murdoch's Fox, we were treated to a hyper-mediated onslaught of radical right-wing pounding and fear-mongering that whipped this nation into a frenzy of anxiety and desperation. With orange alerts and yellow alerts and amber alerts, with anthrax scares and terrorists in every corner, we as a nation allowed our commander-in-chief to invade a defenseless, sovereign nation and enact homeland legislation that undermined the Constitution and our basic civil liberties. All in the name of security and patriotism, all draped in the flag, all justified by lies and half-truths, all backed by a complicit media who enabled and emboldened a radical, neoconservative, right-wing global agenda. And that is the power of television. So I thought, that's it. I'm not going to bitch about it. And even with shows like Queer as Folk or Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, Will and Grace, 6 Feet Under, I still don't always see myself or my views represented in media. So I had a new strategy. I was going to become the media. And I used my film degree to form a production company called Open Door Documentaries, and I'm currently producing a documentary on homeless gay kids in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're accepting donations. I do have pamphlets up here. And also, another cool thing is I became the producer of KLCL's talk show Radioactive, which I'm proud to say is Utah's only homegrown progressive talk show daily tackling all the big social justice issues, all from an unapologetically liberal perspective. We air live shows daily from noon to 1 p.m. on 90.9 FM, Radio Free Utah. Today I'm Mormon free. And I'm living my life as big as I can. I'm liberal, I'm gay, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a producer, I'm tons of different things. And I'm grateful for all the stimulation, mediated or otherwise, that has nurtured me along the way. Thanks.
Wow, you really did read that different than my last show. It's fun to hear your story. Is Steve Peck here? No? Okay. Somebody wanted to share something at the beginning of the thing. Who would like to come up, either ask some question or talk about some television shows that have made you see the world in an interesting or different way, or have a question for our panelists? Go ahead and ask that, and I'll try to repeat it if it needs to be.
I helped start the Star Trek club at BYU. What was interesting is we had problems forever until we got Steve Covey and Hugh Nibley as the advisors. What I enjoyed in many ways, there was kind of a black and white in a different place. To give you one example, there was an episode
where one guy was black on one side and white on the other, and the other guy was just opposite, and they were completely opposed to each other, destroyed both civilizations, and fought across time to do it. Would you comment on your observation of the Star Trek phenomenon?
Would you like to, Jim? The question is to talk about the Star Trek phenomenon, and it was too long for me to be complicated. I think so. Let's try it.
Yeah, I'm a Star Trek fan as well, especially of Next Generation, but I liked Classic Trek very much as well, and that's one of my favorite episodes. The one for the tape, the one that he mentioned, is the one where there's a planet. Some people have white on one side, black on the other side of their face. The other race is exactly the opposite. And of course, to the viewer, it seems so very arbitrary. And to them, it's so very important. And it was a controversial statement at the time about racism in America. And of course, Star Trek also was controversial for featuring the first interracial kiss on network television between Uhura and Captain Kirk. So obviously, boldly going where no one had dared go before. And, you know, I wasn't watching Star Trek. I wasn't even alive when Star Trek was first on television, but I certainly became a fan later, and it was very important to me, especially some of the Next Generation episodes where Jean-Luc Picard is wrestling with questions of the fundamental question of ethics. Do the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many, which also features in the film Star Trek II.
Anyone else
want to?
Anyone else?
No comments about the uniforms, the Starfleet uniforms, or anything from Troy? Those were hot.
Anyone else would like to share an episode or something? Well, for instance, I've been thinking, you know, if I would have written this book, I didn't have time to do anything. I was just thinking of some of the characters who I think are really compelling people. And the one who strikes me the most is Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue. And I've sort of all the biblical characters that I admire the most, I like Jonah is the closest to me. And that's how Andy Sipowicz sort of comes across to me. It's the person who wants to do good, but yet initially will always run the opposite direction. And he sort of has to live with the anxiety and the depression that comes when he knows he's being called to do something better, and he's hesitant at first, and yet he finally goes back to it. So he's always been an interesting and complex character for me, and I was hoping through the way we wrote the abstract up that some of you would come to this thing with characters or shows or things that do it. So Holly's going to come up, and hopefully a parade of you will just come on up.
Well, if you can look at that way, then. Anybody else here a fan of Dead Like Me? It's on Showtime. It just started its second season. I like it almost as much as Buffy. And the main character is a young woman named Georgia Lass, who became a Grim Reaper when she was incinerated by a toilet seat falling from near. And it's one of those complex shows that deals with the fact that the most horrible and tragic things in life are often funny. It's not really funny to her that her life was snuffed out by a toilet seat, but you know, people meet her and they're like, oh, you're a toilet seat girl. And there are five people whose job is to be Grim Reapers, and one of the taglines of the show is, before you meet your maker, you have to meet your reaper. And it deals with what is the value of life, what does it mean to die, and how do we find joy? It's a really, really wonderful wonderful, compelling show. It's rated TV-14, which means they use the F word, but you don't have to see a lot of naked people doing things. It's also on cable, so there isn't the corporate stuff. I think that is one reason I didn't watch television for 20 years. I just couldn't stand commercials. It also has Mandy Patinkin as a really, really, really wonderful supervisor who's just about as cranky as anybody can be and incredibly wise. And I was feeling really quite sad, didn't know what to watch anymore, and then this came along. So if you've got Showtime, here's the commercial. I'm it. Watch Dead Like Me.
Gary's got a trick.
There are two TV shows that I wanted to mention. The first one is Millennium. I don't know how many of you remember that show. That was, I think Chris Carter was involved with that from the X-Files. But Millennium was a very dark series. And I think the thing that really struck me and hooked me to that show was the point that they would make periodically was that sometimes when bad, evil things happen, there is no reason. They just happen. And you just have to deal with it when they happen to you. The other is I want to throw my support behind Jana for Buffy, because, for those of you who haven't, and I imagine that there's a few people out there, a few of you who've never seen Buffy, who look at it and think it's just a silly, silly show. You would be surprised if you turned it on and watched it for a while. And the one episode of Buffy that really struck me, death in Buffy is often portrayed as not really having much consequence. Most of the characters who die are vampires, and there's not a lot of sympathy that's solicited for the death of a vampire. But there is an episode where Buffy's mother dies. And that probably, for me, was the most powerful episode, not of Buffy, but really of a lot of TV shows, because it was an unflinching portrayal of death and what happens in the wake of death itself and how you have to deal with that. So you might not that might not want to be your introduction to Buffy, but it certainly is an episode worth seeing.
When you mention characters, I don't think I've ever seen an entire episode of Home Improvement, but every once in a while I come across it when Wilson is talking, the neighbor, Wilson, who's God. And I just love the way he's portrayed. He's kind of detached. They never actually see him completely. It's not like he can't be seen, but they never look at him completely. And he offers these nibbles of things, and people can either take them or leave them. He never comes over and says, you have to do this or straighten out or anything. So I really like that character. But another one that I just happened to see recently is Monk. And I really enjoy... It's Tony Shalhoub, isn't it? I really enjoy this because here is a character who is so flawed. He has had terrible things happen to him. He has things that are just a part of him because that's who he is. And he's recreated his life. And he's not blaming anyone else for the way he is. He's not overwhelmed by anger. He's just recreating his life, and the great thing about it is he chose to do it by asking for help. And so this constant turning to other people to help him get through these things that he himself is struggling with, but not stopping regardless whether they can help him or not stopping. And the sense that he's hilarious, and so I really see this as this, That's us. Deeply flawed. All kinds of terrible things happen, but we can always decide, I'm going to create my life again.
Gary,
grew up on television, and I don't know if it would be or not, but I don't think so. I love TV. I say it unapologetically, and I love all the shows that we talked about here. I want to tell Jana that because of you and my daughter, Emily, who won the book from you, I've just this past year watched all six seasons of Buffy on DVD that are out. I got the sixth season packaged with your book from Amazon. That was a deal that they were offering. And I'll plan on watching season seven whenever they release that. So I loved it, and I've enjoyed the insights and loved your book as well. I wanted to mention another TV show that I like a lot, and that's Gilmore Girls. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that. But a good TV show needs more than just a concept. I mean, you've got to have good writing. And The Simpsons is an example of that. The writing is incredible on The Simpsons. That's why it's been so good for so long. But I think the Gilmore Girls has some of the best writing on TV. And it's about a single mother who's raised her daughter, and they have this just incredible relationship. And their dialogue, I can't express what their dialogue is like. You just have to watch it. It's on the WB on Tuesday nights or something. But so that's my recommendation. Go on, girls.
From Buffy went over to write for Gilmore Girls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of the same writers.
Oh, I didn't
even
know that.
Sorry.
Oh,
no. I'm actually a Star Trek fan, too, and I can actually remember arranging my college schedule so I could be home in time. I'd pick classes and arrange it so I could be home in time to watch every episode. I'm actually here in defense of my husband's favorite old show, I should say. He always wondered why he could never watch Leave It to Beaver. And searching on eBay a couple of years ago, he found the first half on video, and advertisement free, of course, and he purchased them. It didn't matter the price, he was in there. And about 6 months later, when he won it, the guy said, I'm coming out with the second half. So we have about 60 videotapes, every single show on video, and it makes for a great family home evening. A good 20-minute home evening show to my two sons, who are exactly the same age, growing up with the two sons in Leave It to Beaver. And I do have to take issue. There are a few times that Ward Cleaver actually does at least exaggerate if he doesn't lie. Anyway, and the things I enjoyed is, I can tell you, Jim Cleaver was one of the very first to stand up and smart and kind of had some ideas of her own, and I appreciated that in those early black and white shows. And also that Ward Cleaver, you see him angry, and you often don't see that in TV. You see this father who's dealing with raising children. And so we, when we'd sit down, the four of us together, our two older girls have moved out, but when we'd be the four of us, we could learn some good lessons, and it seemed appropriate for each of us, so we really enjoyed that.
I can't believe you said nothing about MASH. Wisecracking, irreverent, insubordinate jerks half the time, but wonderful cut-ups, highly entertaining, and kept things lively, and yet were so deeply compassionate when it counted, and so sensitive to other people, and their whole life was devoted to caring, caregiving, and helping alleviate pain. The episode I want to highlight, I mean, I've read 11 years, seasons, or hundreds of them, and I love to watch the reruns on cable. Anyway, this one episode, Radar wants to get a tattoo. This is 1972, I think. And these two guys who are not prophets, BJ and Hawkeye, give him all the reasons why not to. All wise reasons. It's ugly. What if, well, several characters actually, Potter helped Seeming and others try to talk him out of it because of all these wise, good reasons not to get a tattoo. And suddenly, in 2009, whenever we got the word that tattoos were spiritually bad, I wondered, why can't you just give the advice that Hawkeye and BJ gave? Instead of implying that there's something morally wrong or spiritually wrong with getting your body painted up. Anyway, that's my soapbox, Troy. The character I want to mention is Worf from Star Trek. Now, all of them are fascinating, but Worf is the most intriguing from a Mormon standpoint because he's a committed Klingon, but he's living in two worlds, and he doesn't know what to be, whether to be Federation or Klingon, and yet when it comes down to the really emotional issues, he's Klingon, yet he knows, and then he tries to turn his son into a Klingon. And his son asks about these legends that he's taught, that he's teaching his son, is this true? And he says, it's the story we tell. That's helped me on my spiritual journey.
President, since you'd like to bear my testimony, no. Two real briefly of my favorites, and that would be under both cereals, and that's kind of interesting because I think cereals tend to draw you along and keep you hooked and get you going and get you involved in the situation, and you feel like you're part of the series. And I heard the initials JR real quick, and I religiously watched Dallas, I think, almost every episode. I probably missed six of them. Every morning on cable, when it was on cable, I'd be up watching JR and his crazy antics and what's going on with the Ewing family. I think they're kind of an evil antithesis of the Huntsmans, you know, on the other side of the situation. You know, family getting involved in a major corporation, even Bobby ran for the state senate, by the way. And it just grabbed me, and I had a lot of fun with it. I think it was a great series. I've been to Southport Ranch 3 times. Probably want to go back again. And the other one would be Twin Peaks. I mean, I was totally involved with what was going on with that eerie, wonderful show that David Lynch gave us. And as a matter of postscript here, I happened to be watching, on the night that a man in Salt Lake City was dumping his wife into a garbage receptacle, I was watching Laura Palmer getting found in a log wrapped in plastic that night. So I thought it was kind of an interesting dichotomy. But I want to read you something real quick. It has nothing to do with this, but I just thought this was kind of odd here. This was in the newspaper today. As I was watching a news report about the LDS Church and how it appoints replacements for the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, I was thinking who would be one of the nominees for position, and the thought came to me. I have a fantastic nominee. He is qualified, educated, loves people and life, has a strong testimony of his church, and would bring along his wad of humor into the new century of church leadership. I nominate Robert Kirby. It was read by a guy named Ned Merton from Middell, so I thought that was interesting.
Is there a second?
Sorry to be up here twice, but I only talked about a show. I didn't talk about a character, and as I listened to people talk about characters, I suddenly realized the single character who had the most influence on me. As I mentioned, I didn't watch television for basically 20 years, so I have to go back a ways, but the most important character to me on television was Oscar the Grouch. And I was 5 years old when Sesame Street started, and I loved Oscar. I absolutely loved Oscar. I loved that he found beauty in things other people rejected. I loved that he was his own cranky, strange self. I loved that everybody else just put up with him, and he was still an accepted member of the community. And I have to admit, I guess there are some ways in which I followed his example. And, all right, that's enough.
If I might add one thing, there was two series and one movie that really affected me. I graduated from Annapolis, had 4 tours of Nam, and Dear Hunter and all the rest of them alienated me. Tour of Duty told the story of real people, but more importantly, one movie in particular was Uncommon Valor. I watched that 700 times. And the only thing that was problem with it was the last 15 minutes, because the nation that put 25 men on the moon in 20 years did not get one live in MIA out of Southeast Asia in the same time period. That's a statement that indicts everyone. And the last series was Magnum P.I. The guy, the character, was supposed to have been the quarterback my senior year, and I ended up writing the last 2 episodes of it because it was about our senior football team. The Madden is coming out September 15th for a presentation. But to me, that's where the boy was. Everyone survived together by working together and helping each other. And now, instead of 2,900 MIAs, there's only 900 MIAs left in Southeast Asia.
Thank you. Well, Holly spoke twice, so I felt like I had permission to get up here again and talk about one more TV show, which I've only recently started watching, and I saw the first season of 6 Feet Under. Have you all seen that? It's quite brilliant and disturbing and creative and shocking, and it's what?
Self-indulgent.
Well, see, I don't actually have HBO. I'm totally dependent on DVDs, so I don't know what's been going on lately. Don't tell me. No spoilers. But 6 Feet Under is a show that makes me sit back and simply say, there but for the grace of God go I. Because these characters are so deeply flawed, and yet they love each other so much, they hurt each other so much. And I think that it is a universal truth that we are most likely to hurt the ones that we love the most and wish that we were not hurting. And so 6 Feet Under is something that speaks to me. Thanks for talking about Oscar the Grouch. I have a Grumpy Bear watch, because Grumpy Bear is the marginalized Care Bear, and it's very difficult to find anything with Grumpy Bear on it. But it's important. Grumpy Bear is so oppressed, but it's important to recognize that it's okay to be a grouch. Thanks.
I thought it'd be fun in the last 15 minutes, if you are interested, those who hang in with us, to talk about maybe just call them out. What would be your nominations for the most spiritually bereft shows? And see if we can wrestle for just a few minutes about what maybe is the difference. Anything on Fox News? What was this? Touched by an Angel, spiritually bereft, why?
I don't know about being bereft.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought we were nominating bad or spiritually bereft.
Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel, bereft. Okay, so we've heard it both positive and negative. We touched by an angel. Oh, jeez. We're getting too late in the day with that comment. Please. Angels in America as spiritually bereft?
Not bereft.
Oh, okay, so we pause this. Okay, it sounds like nobody wants to go my direction, so come back up for the last few minutes and please talk about your favorites. Rolling Mount Laughing is a favorite.
The Democratic National Convention.
Was the positive or a negative?
A
negative for the Democratic National Convention, Richard. Did you have one?
Right. You said married with children is the antithesis of the Simpsons. There's no.
Yes.
Married with children is the antithesis of the Simpsons. The best family show, The Cosbys. Okay, what makes these shows good, or at least have the redeeming qualities, versus some that wouldn't? We're here with theoretical type folks. Anyone have any initial thought, Lori? Oh, sorry.
An interest in ethics. I mean, this is why I hate Friends.
these shows are 6 Feet Under, Buffy, Dead Like Me, ER, Simpsons. These are shows where there is a concern with ethics, and you see people struggle, and they try to work it out. They sometimes get it wrong, they sometimes get it right. And, you know, as I listen to this, growing up for me, as a good Mormon who believed in the church, I always pitied so many of the people I saw on television because they lacked the church to tell them what to do. And now, as someone who has left the church, I now pity the people in the church who rely on the church to tell them what to do, who don't do the very, very, very hard work of figuring out the right thing to do. And the struggle in and of itself is important and valuable, and watching people go through that struggle is to me what's going to make it important. The other thing is I want to see at least one character who is kind, not just nice, but kind, compassionate. And this actually is my current complaint with 6 Feet Under. I quit watching it because everybody's so into David, and I just can't stand it. No one's nice to him. So, you know, ethics and compassion, and that has to work out in some way. And that's for instance why Fox News is so. It's they don't really care about ethics, and they're never kind. So anyway.
You're closer. Check it up first. Well, what? As
for spiritual abrupt, I love Seinfeld, but you know, just the characters. Just last night, we were watching a show where Jerry and his friends make fun of his girlfriend. They give her this voice for her stomach, you know, and they're always doing this voice, and it's the girlfriend, when she finds out, is offended, and she says, either you can be with me or you can do this silly voice, and he chooses the voice. And he only gets back together with her when he realizes his friends don't like the voice, and you know, and it's just but they know it, kind of, and that's what makes the series finale so great, because you know, at the time I didn't like it. I was like, this isn't funny at all, but they all get arrested because they see a crime and they're making fun of, you know, the victim of the crime, and they get arrested for was it Good Samaritan laws, and they go to jail. And so as funny as the show is, it is, you know, very kind of spiritually void show. So that's my example.
Just while she's coming up, interestingly, most interesting is now we're talking about spiritually bereft as a positive thing, and before we're looking at it as a negative, it's a good thing, and I approve.
I was just going to mention a show that had me deeply intrigued, and it's unfortunately, I think, falling by the wayside because of a change in producer, and I know who I will be voting for in the coming election, and that's due to West Wing, and that has, I know who I want there, but I don't think he is in the running.
Northern Exposure.
Oh,
the spiritual values and all through on that. Please. Mysticism.
Shows like one of the kind of shows that I think is very useful, those that really honestly explore the dilemmas of life in real ways. Star Trek was brought up. A movie that played on TV was Star Trek Generations. This is where you have, you know, Kirk and Picard both in the same one because of this strange time warp wave that is moving through the universe. They get caught up in it and they can go back to anywhere they want in their life. And Kurt goes back to the time he was in Idaho in a cabin with the lady, his beloved, and he had been called to go off into the universe from there, and he had another choice. And so he's there with her, and Picard chose to, because he'd never had a family, this is the thing he yearned for the most, to go to a place where he was with a family, this wonderful family,
Christmas time, it was just, you know, the perfect home setting for him. And he, and then both of these in this setting get called because of this time warp. There's this evil genius that's going to destroy a world. And the only way they can prevent this is for these two men to come together and prevent it. And so the dilemma is duty and responsibility, or the heart and the love that you want to choose. And it's one of the great dilemmas of the great literature, called Pottock, A Fiddler on the Roof, The Jazz Singer. It's that same dilemma. Do I give myself to duty and family and tradition and what is necessary ethically, or to where my heart goes in a different direction? So that's the dilemma I think many of us face, and so I loved that kind of show in particular.
About 5 minutes left. Anybody else
want to
weigh in one way or the other?
Oh, sure. Well, I went to England on the mid, so I came back loving Brit TV and Monty Python. I think it's not. Sometimes it can be a character like Ron Polo the Bailey, or some of the things that he says about Hilda that are so astonishing. But she doesn't want happiness. She wants the responsibilities of command. And or to watch something like Prime Suspect with Jane Tennison being the first woman investigating a serial killer. It's just absolutely riveting. Or something like James Burke on Connections. The day the universe changed, making knowledge, information so captivating you just cannot look away from it. But sometimes it can be just a single moment, and a moment that sticks with me. I'm going to show an episode of Star Trek where they just have, you know, cheesy adventure on a planet where Spock gets hit by a plant that gives them emotions, and they go through the whole thing, they get rid of the emotions at the very end. And they have their usual bit at the very end, and Spock says, or Kirk says to Spock, "Well, what do you think about that?" And Spock says, "I don't have anything to say about it, Captain, except for the first time in my life, I was happy." And they cut back to him, and it's the old Spock. There's no expression, there's no sadness or anything, just that voice, and it just cut. And you just have to look and ponder the implications of that. And I've been pondering it for an awful long time. But I think it's those moments that you can have with, where it just catches you, and a moment that will never let go. There's like a moment in Buffy in the second season where Angel had lost his soul, and at the climax, you know, the world is ready to die, and Buffy's been fighting Angel and just hasn't, and she's ready to stab him, and he says, "Buffy, what happened?" And the moral choice at that moment, I think that was one of the things we were watching, and you realize this is not just a kid show, this is a moment that transcends anything I've ever seen. A burden too heavy to carry, and yet the heroic thing is taking it, knowing how much it's going to hurt not only the people that you love, but yourself. And it's moments like that where you start to comprehend the atonement, I think. Because you're taken so far out of yourself into that character that you have been touched in a way, and that's what it's supposed to do at its best. You're taken out. It's not like the thing in comedy where there's the comedy of ridicule. I think Northrop Frye talks about this. There's this kind of the ridicule of casting out the people, and there's another kind of thing that pulls you in. When you catch what's going on with King Lear or Gloucester and watching Shakespeare, or even Homer Simpson or Bart sometime, or Bart when, you know, I had an episode where Bart is wanted this horrifying violent video game, and he stole it, and he broke his mother's heart, and then for his birthday she gives him a present, and it's a golf simulator. And he says, "Thank you, Mom." There's a moment like that where you forget that Bart's a cartoon character, but you see how much a moral decision that a child can make. He knows that his mother's happiness is more important than anything else in the world right at that point. So it can do that. It can do the right thing sometimes. You know, it can also there can be the lies and the commercials and everything, but those moments are worth it.
I don't want to end anywhere but that one. That was just terrific. Thank you, Kevin. And thanks to all of our panelists, and hope you had a good time.